Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
Oh, and I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag, and we are back in the studio, Gov. I'm so happy to have you here.
It's home.
It is home.
The other place, while I appreciate having the other place available
Olive
to
Garden
us.
Olive Garden Theater, yeah.
Olive Garden Theater. it is good to be back where, you know, the space and we have the right lighting.
It just feels natural here. So it's so good to have you back. And I got you sick, so we weren't able to shoot last week.
Yeah.
And we're going to do two shows today, so we're going to be wearing the same clothes and two short shows. But that's how it goes. So, but glad to have you here, and I hope you feel better, buddy.
Oh, yeah. I had a root canal yesterday that I'm still recovering from.
So sick and a root canal.
Yeah. The fun never ends.
Oh, my gosh, man. So sorry. And you think I got you sick, so.
Well, I'm not ruling out the possibility.
Yeah,
it's not something that I would wish to test further.
In the old theater, we had stand closer. I was coughing all over you. I know, I'm sorry.
Well, unfortunately, nowadays, you know, with a kid and.
You're never going to be well again.
You'll always have a cough. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, first question from Andre. Is it possible to change the location of the volume overlay? And you might notice this.
This volume overlay right here. Unfortunately, no. There's no way to change it because there is no good place to, you know, want to move it to, for one.
Yeah.
And two, it's a transitory image, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not designed to be there for any length of time.
Yeah.
And if you don't like that particular volume, you know, you can always be on the desktop, you know, and you have this volume.
So correct.
So this is the exact same volume. This is just the this version over here is the modern volume overlay.
Yeah, and that works when you do the buttons on the side of your Surface Pro.
Correct.
You can also do the function and the volume buttons on the keyboard.
Correct.
As well.
On my particular keyboard, no function required.
Oh, really?
Yours too.
All right.
We promoted them. Remember, function keys
are
kind of passé nowadays.
All right, so next question from Edward. Is there a way to update group policy from a Windows 2008 to a Windows 7 PC immediately? I've tried GP update force, GP update force boot log off, and GP update force wait :0/boot with no luck. I checked all the settings and everything is correct.
Basically, you've done everything that you can. I mean, some of the more basic things is just to make sure that the group policy service is actually running on the machine in order to get those updates correctly. And if they're still not processing for whatever reason, you have to check the event log for group policy to make sure that they're actually contacting the domain controller and that they have rights to execute the policies.
Okay.
For whatever reason, your system may not, if you're pushing the group policies for like a particular organizational unit or whatever, you might have some rules set where, you know, this particular machine or the particular user logged into the machine is being exempted from those rules. So you're going to have to figure out through the logs to see, you know, A, are the group policies at all being processed? And then from there, figure out which specific rules aren't being processed.
Yeah.
An easier way to do that would be to specifically take your machine, push it into a completely new organizational unit with no group policies that are assigned to it, and assign one very basic group policy that is easy to check for. For example, forcing a background image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you do that, you can say, "Oh, yes, the background image changed. Yes, the group policy is being applied." That's, you know, an easier way to debug these types of issues.
Okay. All right. Next question is from Golnaz and myself. And we were out of the studio for about 3 months while they were doing a bunch of work on the building. But after being out of the studio for a few months, we came back to a domain join machine that wouldn't take the password we use for our domain account. We use this domain account, C9 Studio. When using the password, it would say something along the lines, "Cannot find a trusted account on the server for this machine. So I figured, hey, we've changed that password since we were out of the studio. Mm-hmm. So I used the old password for that domain account, and it logged on. And then I did Control-Alt-Delete and tried to change the password to the new one, and it wouldn't take it. So then after a reboot, it wouldn't take either. So I unplugged the network cable, and it logged on fine with the old password. But how to resolve this was the question.
Simplest way to resolve this, and the actual reason behind this is that it, since it's been disconnected from the network for so long, the machine password expired. Mm-hmm. Simplest way, and I've had to do this countless numbers of times in the past, is just disjoin from the domain and then rejoin.
Okay.
That will get everything synced up properly with the new password. Normally, what you'd only have to do is log in with the old password, lock the machine, mm-hmm. and then unlock it with the new password.
Yeah.
Occasionally, that doesn't work, so which is why more go brute force and just disjoin and rejoin to the domain.
Okay, cool. All right, next question. I've been having some issues on my computer for a while, and I tried to fix it. I decided to run checkdisk /FXR.
So F force fixes the any issues that are found.
Mm-hmm.
X forces a dismount of the volume before doing anything.
Yep.
And then R is going to try to recover any data from any bad sectors that it finds.
To see if there's a problem, I started this when I arrived in the morning, assuming it would be done by home time, but it's still running. It's currently at 24% and it has been for several hours. I'm unsure whether I should leave the laptop here and let it run overnight or take it with me and leave it running at home. My concern is with the disks so active, would it be risky to move the laptop via a backpack during this time?
So this is a spinning disk, I'm guessing.
Spinning disk question. So
yeah.
Is it safe to move a computer that's spinning on check disk?
So it's a laptop, right?
Yeah.
So laptop drives are significantly more resilient to being moved because, mm-hmm. you know, they're laptops.
They're made to be moved.
They're made to be moved.
They have to assume that the disk is going to be spinning
correct,
at some point.
At some point. Now, if you're already suspecting that your drive is having some issues, however, you probably don't want to be moving it. Now, again, the thing to remember for a spinning disk drive when you're moving it is if you move it in plane of whatever the orientation of the drive is, if you can be certain that you're always moving it in plane. So, for example, well, none of our systems here are spinning drives. But if you take a laptop, and you know the drive is mainly in this base, so it's in a horizontal plane. If you close the lid and take the laptop and keep it in that plane all the time, you're essentially safe.
But if you turn it sideways,
backpack, that's where issues will potentially start to occur.
And if you absolutely have to do that, can you just turn it slow?
Speed really doesn't factor in here.
Okay, because what I'm thinking is. A lot of times when I've used a 3.5-inch drive in a dock, and you take it out and it's still spinning, it's like holding a gyroscope. It's
basically,
like hard to turn.
Yes.
And so I always like try to be really careful, and if I have to set the drive down, I just do it slowly, thinking that's going to help, but probably not.
Well, it's better than jerking it around.
True.
So I will give you that. It's definitely better than jerking it around. But it's also one of those things that I would just recommend, if you can, to not move us, be on the safe side here.
Yeah.
You know, you're already suspecting that the drive is having problems. So don't move it. Don't disconnect power. And the other thing is, you know, this thing is spinning like crazy, generating heat, drawing power. So if you stick this into your backpack.
Check the traffic before you leave to make sure you got enough battery to get home.
Right.
Yeah.
And just the heat generated. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want your system overheating either.
Yeah.
So
in a backpack is not going to be helpful.
Right. So I would just leave it as is. And again, if you're suspecting that the drive is failing, don't wait, get another drive, like have it on order. And in fact, I do this for my machines. If I've had failing drives in the past, not too many, because I've got, you know, RAID systems, nothing is ever catastrophic for me.
Yeah.
But whenever I'm buying a replacement drive for something that has failed, get extras.
Yeah.
Because if you've bought them in, you know, similar lots, you will have a higher likelihood of failure from that same lot.
Yeah.
So I won't necessarily buy at exactly the same time because I also don't want to incur the failing lot problem, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I will buy an extra drive and then I'll, you know, wait a week, get another extra drive.
Yeah, same one though.
Same one. We usually can guarantee that it's not from the same lot given that time frame.
Cool, okay. Next question. I have a hard drive and UltraBase slot of a ThinkPad instead of the DVD drive. When booting the system, the hard drive's automatically being mounted and visible to me. Using the icon in the taskbar, I can unmount it. Ultimately, it's only available again when I reboot the system. Is there a command line script that I can execute to dismount the drive and mount it again with another script without having to reboot?
Sure. You can use a disk part script in order to do that. Here's a KB 300-415. I'm not going to go through all the various options, but the online offline is going to be basically the ones that you're going to want to use in order to bring a disk online and offline.
Okay.
I'm not entirely certain why you would want to have this extra drive installed that's not actually available at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, here you go. You can use disk part in order to get that.
Oh, you have a triage meeting.
I do have a triage meeting.
All right, next question. I just plugged in my Sennheiser CX300II headphones into the front panel, and now the sound doesn't change when I move the volume bar on Windows. I hear sounds, but I can't change the volume. The volume changes with any other web player controls like YouTube or Windows Media Player. Any idea why it does that?
So that's the master volume. What will sometimes occur is when you plug in headphones, you'll get a separate volume control here for headphones that are independently controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And when the headphones get plugged in, it does tell the system that...
Don't use the speakers.
Don't use... And the applications, like the web apps and IE, for example, are smart enough to know that, hey, that's the current output source, so I'm going to change my volume control to use that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just make sure that... when you're changing the volume, if you see it on the speakers, that may not be why you can actually control them.
And it kind of depends on the manufacturer and how their driver is written, too.
Yes.
All right, next question. I'm running a bad 4G Windows 8 gateway laptop, and I have a lot of files and coding scripts. This is causing my memory to drain. I was wondering if I could clean a flash drive, which I know how to do, and convert it to extra memory on my computer. Two parts to this question. Because
it made my head hurt.
Well, one of it is I was like, yeah, I'll tell you how you do it. You right-click on the thumb drive, you format it, then you click on the Ready Boost tab in the properties, and you can select it to be a Ready Boost. But that's not going to fix your problem.
No.
So the problem is the memory drain. And
and I suppose terminology is actually the more problematic problem. Memory drain is... That was one of the things that hurt my head when I read it. The question seems to sound more like he's running out of space on his hard drive.
Yeah.
Now, yes, you can use a flash drive in order to put your data on it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not going to show up, or it's not going to act as an additional storage on your existing drive.
Yeah.
At least not easily. I mean, you can do things like creating a symlink directory on your drive that points to the flash drive, but then you run issues on, you know, if you pull out the drive
mm-hmm.
and then something is writing to that location, it's now not going to work properly. The Ready Boost is turning that flash drive into cache. So it's all that it's doing is saying, well, which is faster, you know, RAM or hard drive? Obviously, mm-hmm. RAM is faster. Now, which is faster, the flash drive or the disk? Well, the flash drive can be faster than spinning disks.
Yeah.
But is it faster than an SSD, which tends to not usually be the case, which is why Ready Boost is not as helpful in an SSD system. It can be helpful because you're not then writing to SSD.
And it's definitely not a replacement for memory speeds.
And it's absolutely not a replacement for memory speeds. But I think overall, this question, what he's asking for is, you know, can I use this USB stick as part of my hard drive?
Yeah.
Simple answer to that is no. More complicated is yes, if you use something like Symlink.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't really recommend going that route.
Yeah.
I kind of go one or the other. Like, either take your data entirely and just use it on the flash drive, or clean out some of your hard drive space.
Yeah.
But don't try to use it as this quasi hard drive that, you know, you makes your system think that it's part of the hard drive, but if you pull that out, then things start to fail.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I read that as it was a memory leak, but
right,
and just trying to increase memory, which wouldn't be a good solution anyway. So, all right. Next question. I've got a damaged touchscreen. So once Windows loaded, it clicks around and there's no way to do anything. And I was wondering if there's a way to load Windows with touchscreen disabled on purpose, some boot flag or something.
There's no boot flag for it, but what you can do is boot it into like a WinPE or into another OS,
yeah,
and then remove the driver or disable the driver for the for the touchscreen. That's basically going to be your best method.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can get rid of it in the device manager.
Yes.
All right. Okay, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And the first one I want to talk about is Guitar Pro. And Guitar Pro is a really cool app, and I've been using this a lot on my Surface Pro, and they need a modern app. But I've been playing guitar a lot, and I use my Surface Pro at home with GuitarPort on it to do like an effects processor. But for playing sheet music, I use Guitar Pro, and it's just a really cool little app, and I can hit the space bar. I can load tabs, which if you're a guitar player, a tab is just a tablature file that shows the sheet music that you want to play. You load it up in this app, and then you can hit the space bar, and it'll actually play it. Mm-hmm. So whereas a lot of us used to have like PDFs of sheet music, it's not interactive, and you know, it's more of a scan of the sheet music. But this is like an actual music playing system, so it's like a jukebox or something. When you hit the space bar, mm-hmm, it'll play the song so that you can hear how it's played. You can speed stuff up, you can slow stuff down, and this song is pretty cool. I was playing with it this weekend. I just wanted to mention on the show. And then the other thing that I wanted to talk about is this device here that I've been playing with, and this is a Toby Rex. This is the new developer kit that they released. And this Toby Rex thing, you hook it up, and it feels like it was made for the Surface Pro. But you stick a magnetic bar on the front of your Surface, and then it just kind of snaps on. So you just click it, and it's on there. And I'll hook up the screen cap, and I'll show you some screen cap. So right now, by magic, there will be some screen cap that shows my eyes looking at the screen. It's a really neat idea. And it does a couple things. I mean, one of the things that you can do, there's an API. There's not a lot of software, by the way. If you make any software for this, let me know, and I'll be happy to mention it. But one of the things that they have in their demo is you can look at a page, and it'll scroll down so that it scrolls the text for you, which is kind of cool because you don't ever have to worry about the scroll wheel. You just read, and it follows for you. And the other thing that's kind of cool with this is it solves a problem that we have with touch computing with the hover state. You don't really have a hover state with touch because you don't use a mouse typically. And so this has that because your gaze is kind of your hover state.
Right.
So as long as an application is written to use this, it's kind of cool. And the reason why I put those two together is as I use Guitar Pro, I was like, oh, that'd be awesome if it worked with the Toby Rex so that I could just look at my sheet music and have it scroll for me.
Right.
So that's that.
I wonder what it does if you're like reading Reddit and you're rolling your eyes at some really awful comment.
Yeah, moving the page around.
the whole page rotates. It's like, no, that's not what I wanted. I just wanted to downvote. If I roll my eyes, that means I'm downvoting.
One of the cool things is they have some demos of different games and stuff that you can play. And they've got a Space Invaders game where the asteroids that come in, you just look at them and it blows them up. So that's kind of cool. And then they have a couple other game demos that they were showing at CES at their booth, where you can use your gaze to do different things. And they have a version of Bing Maps where you just look at the map, mm-hmm, and when you scroll in and out with your scroll wheel, mm-hmm, it does it exactly where you're looking. So you don't even have to mouse over the part that you want to scroll into, which is kind of cool.
Love to see that coupled with the Kinect.
Yeah, the two together.
Mm-hmm. Because, the Kinect will get, you know, your whole body, but this one gets specifically your eyes.
Yeah, and you can tell exactly what you're looking at. Nice. All right, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com and leave notes in the comments, and we can get to you there. But we like the email for the back and forth. So see you next week.
Thanks.